A royal blue background fills the screen with white words at its center. Sony Pictures Classics. Daytime, archival video shows churning ocean waves. Fade to black. Credits appear. Dog Wolf presents. A glimpse shows sea spray blowing over the water's surface.
The ocean's always trying to kill you. It doesn't take a break.
A new Black Films production. In more footage, a wave rises under a blue sky.
The probability just not making it is high.
An Alex Holmes film. The ocean stretches toward a distant horizon.
You're on your own. There is no hope if anything happens.
Produced by Victoria Gregory. Another glimpse shows surging waves. Written, produced, and directed by Alex Holmes. On a docked yacht, a young woman with dimples faces us.
I'm rolling, Gary, if you want to... And smile.
Sorry.
Smile then.
Hello, I'm Tracy Edwards, skipper of Maiden, the first all-female challenge in the Whitbread Round the World race.
What it takes to sail around the world is, first of all, you have to be a bit crazy.
Glimpses show sailing yachts navigating stormy seas. Waves crash against the small vessels. Crew members in waterproof gear work on board.
You have to be different than the normal bloke.
The interview with Tracy continues.
Hi, I'm Tracy Edwards, skipper of Maiden, the first all-female Whitbread Round the World. That is my smile.
Let's join Lisa Austin out on the start line.
This is the overall scene in the Solent, just a few minutes before the start of the fifth Round the World race.
September 2nd, 1989.
And at 33,000 nautical miles, it is the longest race on Earth.
Southampton, England. Yachts wait offshore.
How many times were you told we couldn't do it? You're not strong enough. You're not skilled enough. Girls don't get on. You'll all die.
Facing away, Tracy stands on a yacht with a crew of women. She looks over her shoulder. Wind whips her hair.
She put everything on the line.
A word on the sail reads, Maiden.
She risked everything for it to happen. There wasn't a choice. It was just something I had to do.
Tracy gazes ahead with an emotional expression, then turns away. Over ocean waves, a title appears. Maiden. A home movie shows a young girl pushing a small wheelbarrow. Now, with gray hair, Tracy Edwards gives an interview.
My early years were idyllic. A world of magic and make-believe and two wonderful parents and a kind of semi-wonderful brother.
More footage shows the family.
My mum was, she was amazing. She'd been a dancer, she'd been a rally driver, she was the first woman to ride a motorbike on the Isle of Man TT course. She met my father when she was driving go-karts. He was her engineer.
People drive go-karts. A mustached man drives a convertible.
My father was an entrepreneur and he designed loudspeakers. They always had something on the go. My parents instilled in me a sense of determination. If you want something, you have to persevere. You can't give up. So that determination comes from them.
Young Tracy plays near her mom and brother.
My early years couldn't have been better, but unfortunately that all came to an end when I was 10.
In washed out footage, Tracy's dad walks toward us.
One night I was asleep and I heard a commotion. I thought I heard my mum screaming, but I wasn't quite sure. And I remember thinking, something's really, really bad is happening. I sat up in bed and I pulled my cubs around me. After a while, Mum came in. She said, Daddy's had a heart attack. The ambulance couldn't get here in time. And he's died.
Tracy's lips tremble.
Sorry.
Footage shows a storefront sign reading Edwards.
That night would change my life forever. My mum tried to take over the running of his hi-fi business. It was a very male-dominated industry. I mean, there were just no women anywhere in it.
Men work on the store's empty interior.
In the end, really, she was pushed out.
The view moves from the sign to people standing on the sidewalk.
This was my first experience of understanding that women didn't work in a man's world, especially at that time.
Outside, Tracy's mom carries a box down stone steps.
She had to do something to support us.
Unfortunately for us, she then met the man that she would marry. We sold the house in Reading and we moved down to Wales.
Footage shows wide fields. A blue-eyed woman sits for an interview. Jo Gooding, childhood friend.
The earliest memory, I suppose, is seeing her on the school bus when we were 12. It was only a small village. You didn't see new people around very often.
Photos show smiling students in uniform.
And she was little like me, I suppose. She was quiet initially. I can't believe I'm saying that about Tracy Edwards, but...
Both of us had quite a rough journey through school, so we were really drawn together.
When you're teenagers, your friends are your family, really. They're the ones you trust. I know that her relationship with her stepfather was quite volatile.
Teenage Tracy watches TV.
This man was an abusive alcoholic.
A home movie shows a man setting down a drink.
He hit me a few times.
The teen gets up and smiles.
I always thought I'd ask for it because I was punched him first or kicked him or exploded in some way.
I just remember one occasion being there and it became really physical, you know, and I was just shocked at that.
In a photo, teenage Tracy stares toward the camera.
I turned from a happy, probably quite delightful child into an absolutely vile teenager, angry, aggressive. I hated everyone.
She films herself in a mirror.
I was suspended 26 times before I was expelled. My mother went in to beg for me to be able to take my O-levels, but then which I didn't turn up to. Instead of asking for help, I ran away. I went as far away as possible.
In Joe's interview,
I remember her going, and I remember really worrying about her, but it was a real struggle to know what to do at 15, 16 years old.
Archival footage shows racing yachts. Male crew members rapidly crank winches. Two men shake hands. An aerial view shows hundreds of boats in a bay.
Exactly 3 years from today, the most grueling yacht race in the world will begin.
The Whitbread was the race.
27,000 miles divided into stages.
Sailing in those days was very much a man's sport. Madmen and adventurers, they were pioneers.
We're sailing on the kind of the edge of disaster, and one false move and it spells trouble.
A challenge like that as a yachtsman going around the world was something you had to do. It was a hell of a challenge.
It attracted the great sailors who wanted to prove something to the world.
Bruno Dubois, skipper.
As a sailor, that was what you had in front of you if you want to succeed.
On rough waters, a crew member spins the wheel. Drops of water smear the lens. A dolphin swims nearby. Footage shows Tracy as a young woman with friends on a beach.
I ended up in Greece working in a bar. I didn't know anyone particularly well. My only contact with other human beings was going out and getting drunk.
On a boat, Tracy films nearby vessels.
I do remember feeling quite lonely. I just wanted to go home, but I wouldn't let myself.
Footage shows a yacht named Rovalam.
One night a guy came into the bar and he said to me, I skipper one of those charter yachts out there and my stewardess has really left me in the lurch.
Do you fancy coming to work as a stewardess?
Tracy serves drinks on the yacht.
And the next day, we left to go to Rhodes. We were a real mixed bag of mostly dropouts, misfits and gypsies and nomads.
Tracy sits on deck with a man.
We were all running away from something.
He sticks out his tongue at the camera.
But we were family units. I mean, surreal family units. I didn't see my skippers as men. I saw them as father figures, I think. I spent my first transatlantic learning how to sail properly.
Film footage shows a yacht sailing through rough waters. Crew members wear raincoats.
Sailing through my first storm, where they had to tie me to the wheels because the wind was so strong that they thought I was going to be blown overboard. Puking into a bucket next to the wheel, but loving it.
Dolphins leap out of the water alongside the boat.
For me, sailing was about freedom. It was freedom of everything. It was leaving everything behind. Everything that happened since my father died.
In a lush area, Tracy walks barefoot toward the camera. She smiles. Another glimpse shows tropical islands.
We didn't cross paths during that time. I knew that she was sailing. I knew that she was over in Antigua, and I heard little pockets about her. It was a bit of jealousy there, you know. Traveling was something I always wanted to do as well.
Tracy scrubs the deck of a yacht. She looks up and grins.
I was sitting on a friend's boat one day, and I was just looking through his books. And I pulled one book out and opened it up. I went, "What's this?" He said, "Oh, that's the Whitbread Round the World race."
Black and white photos show men sailing yachts.
I said, "This is absolutely incredible."
Skip Novak steers a yacht. Two men crank a winch.
I wanted to be part of this.
A man wearing overalls holds a camera. Another photo shows shirtless crew members.
I knew it was just something I had to do. The next day, I went to ask for a job as a cook on a Whitbread Round the World race boat.
Footage shows a racing yacht. At a dock, male crew members load supplies onto a boat. Another man repairs a mast.
I remember going to the skipper. I said, "Are you looking for a cook?" And he went, "We're not having a girl. We're not going to be the only professional racing team in the world with a girl on the boat. Girls are for when you get into port."
The charter yacht sails away.
And then I went back and rejoined the boat. Oh, I was so upset. Then I was told we had this really important charter.
A man uses binoculars.
We see this party coming down the dock. Someone said, "That's King Hussein of Jordan."
A small boat approaches.
And after I'd served lunch, I went down below to do the washing up. And I sensed his presence beside me. And I turned around and it was King Hussein. We started chatting. So he said, "I'm fascinated with this world that you live in. You're like a Bedouin traveling from place to place." And he said, "What are you doing next?" And I said, "I really want to do the Whitbread Round the World race." He said, "That's amazing." And I said, "But they don't want a girl on the boat." And he just said, "You must do it. You must do this." And within an hour, I was completely convinced. I had no doubt at all in my mind that I could absolutely make it happen.
Men prepare a sailing yacht.
And the next day, I went back and said to the skipper, "I've got to be on this boat." I begged.
Barry Pickthall, journalist.
I was dictating my copy in a telephone booth, and there was this slip of a girl in the next booth to me, saying, Mum, I've got a ride on the Whitbread boat. I'm going to be cook."
On a TV show.
Part of the programme is coming live from Gosport, where tomorrow 15 yachts set sail in the Whitbread Round the World yacht race. Well, last-minute preparations are hectic, not least for one of the youngest crew members, the cook on board.
Let's meet that cook. It's Tracy Edwards, the only girl on a British boat on the Round the World race. Now, Tracy, what is the responsibility of a cook on a boat like this?
First responsibility is to keep them healthy. Second one is to keep them happy. You decide how many calories they need a day, how you can split that up into the different meals and still keep it nice so that they're going to enjoy what you're giving them.
So you're really a really major part of the crew, aren't you? Without you...
It's 2 weeks out at sea. Food seems to become a very important part of your life.
Tracy, thank you very much, and good luck around the world.
She was there to do the cooking and cleaning, basically. Everybody made it perfectly plain to her as soon as the race started. That's what her role was.
At a port.
All spectator craft are to clear the line between HMS Glasgow and PS Royland to allow the start to take place.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
There's the gun now for the start of the fourth footbridge round the world.
The yachts start the race. A crew member hoists a sail. On his vessel, Skip glances around.
There were only 4 girls on that race. 230 crew, and 4 of them were girls. I was one of them.
Another glimpse shows the boats. Bob Fisher, journalist.
I don't think she really wanted to cook at all, but she did because it enabled her to go round the world on a boat.
Oh, it was awful. I was treated like a servant. They did not make life easy. At one point, they wrote on the back of my thermal underwear, for sale, 1 case of beer.
Below deck, Tracy ducks and laughs as a man sprays champagne. He pours it for his crewmates.
But, oh, I've never wanted anything so much in my life as to fit in with those guys.
That was a nice, depressing thought.
She drinks with the men. Wearing waterproof gear, the crew works the sails.
The cooking was horrendous. I loved the sailing.
Well, when they let me up on deck.
Nighttime, Atlantic privateer arrives in a crowded port.
And then we won the leg.
It's just jammed as people have sprung down from the eastern suburbs all over Auckland to see Atlantic privateer. There goes the gun and the tremendous roar. Horns going off across the Waitemata Harbour, and Atlantic privateer has taken the gun from line owners.
Daytime, Tracy gives an interview.
The guys on the boat have been really, really good. They're very, very nice guys. A few of them had a little bit of reserve about having a girl on the boat. I mean, even though they're friends, but they put up with it gallantly.
Footage shows people on boats docked side by side.
I thought, I'm not going to put up with this anymore.
Tracy smiles as she walks along the dock.
I wanted to go around as a proper sailor. I didn't want to go around again cooking for a boat full of men.
An all-male crew sits on a yacht. Tracy continues along the dock.
If they weren't going to let me do that, I had to make it happen myself.
And that's when I made the decision to put an all-female crew into the race. Well, after we got off the boat, I called my mum and I said to her, what do you think about me putting an all-female crew in the next Whitbread Around the World race? She sort of took a pause, and then she said, I think if you were truly committed, you would do it. She said, but you've never stuck at anything in your life.
A photo shows Tracy staring toward the camera. An aerial view shows a marina.
4 days later at Southampton Boat Show, I made the announcement.
A poster reads, Maiden, Great Britain, on a TV show.
Go to any boat show and you'll meet people dreaming of great adventures. Now, there was such a girl at the Southampton Boat Show today. Her name is Tracy Edwards, and her dream is to compete in the world's toughest yacht race with the first all-girl crew.
Why do you want an all-woman crew?
People are going to argue. Men are going to say that they can't do it, and women are going to say that they can do it until time ends. So someone has to do it to prove either way.
OK, looking at me.
3 years to race day.
OK, smiling.
Tracy grins for a photo. Her smile fades.
Of course, Joe was the first person I called. That was my dream when I was a teenager. It didn't matter that the only role I could have was cook because I didn't have the racing experience. So I came down and I said, I can do that. And she said, yep, I know you can. How do you know? How do you know? And then I met Howard. I met Howard Gibbons. He became my project manager.
She had a great idea, but how was she going to put it off? You know, that was the big question.
So we met in the pub, back of a beer mat. We wrote down, how do we do this? We interviewed very few people. I mean, I interviewed Sally, but she walked in through the door, laughed and told a joke, and I thought, well, she'll be on the boat.
Sally Hunter, helmswoman.
I knew I really wanted to do it, and I was going to do everything I could to do it.
Nancy Harris, sail trimmer.
It was a very good idea, but it didn't have anything apart from a good idea.
I didn't want a real job. I wanted adventure.
A blonde grins.
You don't know.
Jenny Mundy, bowman.
Being a cook was really the only way onto a boat, and that wasn't me. It was never going to be me. That was a compromise too far as I was concerned.
They were looking for a girl who could sail, who was a doctor, who really had no ties, and I just thought that would be fantastic.
Don Riley, watch captain.
A friend of mine said, you know, there's an all-women's boat going around the world, and my first reaction was, are you kidding me? I don't want to sail with women. There aren't any other women that sail. I'm the only one out here that's any good. And she literally said, come on, don't be so arrogant.
Angela Heath, sail trimmer.
I happened to meet Tracy Edwards in a bar in Cork, as only the Irish can do. I just thought, God, I'd love to do it with them.
Marie Claude Hayes, first mate.
I was finally realizing a dream.
Being a girl is like being a disabled in the sailing world, so you can't join a male project. That's impossible. It's as simple as that. I think I would have been a man. I would have done it at least once already.
It took 10 years to get to a boat that was going to do the Wilbred.
Marie Claude was an extraordinarily experienced sailor with a great reputation.
What is your position on this boat?
I am the first mate, but I am in charge of the sailing side of the boat. I am the one who has to make the boat going fast.
Tracy faces us.
I have selected a crew of 9 dedicated, professional, and highly skilled women sailors. This was not an easy choice. There are many women from all over the world who are quite capable of doing this race. I, like many others, know that we will succeed in our venture.
Tracy gives an interview on a dock.
Are you a feminist or...?
Not at all. I hate that word. I hate the word feminist. I like to be allowed to do what I want to do, and I don't see why I shouldn't be allowed to sail because I'm a girl. And I think it's about time men realise that women enjoy sailing just as much as they do, and they're just as good at it.
With Jenny.
Because we were doing something that we believed in, and we were taking very seriously, but the world around us kind of didn't really see us that way.
Well, I think like most people, we all poo-pooed it. We sort of, you know, had a bit of a chuckle about it and didn't really take it seriously.
We were a kind of rather unusual sideshow.
There were skeptics in the press.
I thought, you know, first of all, where are you going to get the money? How are you going to get a boat? And how are you going to get in the race?
A misogynistic cartoon depicts the female crew.
I think we felt patronised. You know, we were all the little ladies, you know, they're all going to be there having a little scrap.
What about the packing allowances? Lots of Vaseline for chap lips and no waterproof mascara.
That's right.
At a winchman challenge, a burly man spins a winch handle.
There's the physical side.
All we were told today were looking for is just brute strength and ignorance, really.
There's the emotional side. If you accept the fact that the two genders do have differences, if you don't accept that, then, you know, you're in hot water if you start promoting these ideas, you know, so you got to be very careful. Yeah.
On a TV show.
Months of design and planning goes into a new Whitbread boat. Preparation has been the key to winning past Whitbread races.
Money tends to follow men.
The bottom line of a maxi project for this fifth running of the Whitbread was close to $6 million.
I mean, the problems start, of course, when you've got to find all the sponsorship to raise £1 million in sponsorship.
Yes.
I mean, how do you get that sort of money out of businessmen when you're this gorgeous slip of a young girl?
With great difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
It has been very difficult, not only to convince companies that all female crew can do this, but that also it's something that they want to do, that it's something that fits into their policy of sponsorship or whatever.
We went to hundreds of companies and got absolutely nothing back. No one was the slightest bit interested.
The project is geared to winning on our own boat at the moment, and it's quite heartbreaking seeing the plans of the boat and, you know, sort of we haven't started building it yet.
There was that sort of unspoken fear that we weren't going to be able to cope with it.
We were a high-risk crew.
You want the rudder to go up?
The letters we got back, some of them were quite extraordinary. One of them said, the thought of 12 of my wife sailing around the world fills me with horror. We had the one saying, we really love this, but it's just too much of a risk with adverse publicity if something were to happen.
It would be a tragedy, but we weren't doing it with the belief that we were going to die. We were doing it with the belief that we could sail around the world and do it competitively, you know.
Someone will step forward. This is too good an opportunity to be missed.
Over photos of Tracy's home office, dates appear, moving from January 1987 to July 1988.
I spent 2 years looking for the sponsorship. We just couldn't raise the money.
She was honest and said, we're living day to day.
With Sally.
Actually, it was borderline whether it was going to make it.
I knew something had to change. We were bashing our head against a brick wall and there wasn't even a crack.
A photo shows Tracy typing.
I was asleep one night, woke up 2 o'clock in the morning, sat bolt upright in bed, and I thought, we've got to buy a second-hand boat. Everyone went, and how are we going to do that? I went, I'm going to remortgage my house and borrow the money and get the boat. And then I said, if we had to do a refit, we'll remortgage the boat to pay for the refit.
Another photo shows Tracy at home.
She put everything on the line, didn't she? You know, she put her home on the line.
With Joe.
She risked everything, really, for it to happen.
A photo shows a dilapidated, dry-docked yacht on stilts.
The ship came into Southampton, and we were there on the dock to see this quite scruffy-looking boat.
With Jenny.
I thought, bloody hell. Just look at the state of that.
1 year to race day.
I had a lot of convincing to do, but that's what we could afford, so that's what we had to get on with.
So it was a bit of a holy hell. OK, this is one hell of a project.
A woman wearing a boiler suit climbs a ladder to the boat with Marie Claude.
I say, OK, get your overalls. We've got work to do.
Marie Claude tapes the side of the boat. Journalist Barry Pickthall.
You don't see women working in a boatyard. So this was another first.
Two women work on the deck. Our view zooms out to show another woman in the yard with Claire Warren, doctor.
I wanted a role, so I learnt plumbing. I mean, if there's anything I could do was cope with bodily fluids.
With Jenny.
I pretty much run almost every cable in that boat.
Coming from the racing world and having built racing boats before, I had some experience, so I was quite confident.
Mary Claude sands the interior of the ship. More women work on the deck.
The challenges were more a relationship with Tracy.
Tracy spreads putty on a surface.
As the time went on, it became more and more difficult. We're like trading on eggs a bit. Is she going to be in a bad mood? Is she going to be in a good mood?
Tracy was not a comfortable person at times to be around.
Video shows a boat lift hoisting the refurbished yacht. Tracy stands in the yard.
I think we had no idea how much pressure she was under.
There was the negativity coming from the outside. The struggle for money was becoming really wearing. But it was my own insecurities that really were my biggest problem at that time.
Tracy stands with Marie Claude.
Inside, all I was thinking was, am I the right person to do this? So full of doubt and fear. I was trying to deal with anxiety, panic attacks, waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. I guess, I guess things used to get thrown and stuff like that, you know.
Video shows the women moving equipment, then sailing on the yacht. Tracy and Marie Claude stand at the stern.
I remember us being out once and she was angry and shouting at everyone and it was like, for goodness sake, Tracy, these people are your friends. It did feel self-destructive.
Tracy peers out with Joe.
But she'd always had that anger.
It really was, that was a really dark time.
A banner on Maiden reads, this space for sale.
This 58-foot aluminium racing yacht is currently called the Maiden Great Britain, but the crew still need £940,000 over the next year. No sponsor has yet come forward, and the project could be in jeopardy.
Without a major sponsor, the girls have to go back to their jobs, and This incredible British venture will never happen. If we fail this time, it won't happen again.
This was the point that I really, in total frustration, called King Hussein.
Video shows Hussein.
King Hussein arrived in Britain earlier this month for a sinus operation at a private London hospital. This morning, he looked fit and relaxed at the Southampton boat show.
We kept in touch over the years. I would not have asked for his help if I could have seen any other way of getting to where we were supposed to be getting. And you just said, oh, for goodness sake, you've come so far, you can't stop now. Royal Jordanian Airlines will sponsor it. I'll sponsor it. Title sponsorship, finally, of our project.
At a boat christening with Sarah, Duchess of York.
God bless her and all who sail him.
Today, the diminutive Tracy Edwards launched the 58-foot yacht, but still the yachting fraternity doubting Maiden's ability.
People were scathing.
Many sailors drink in a pub.
I remember I went out racing with some guys that I hadn't met. One of them said to me, so when does the race start? I said, September. He said, and when will you be back? I said, the following May. He went, more like October, dear. So that's the way they saw it.
It seemed like the further we got, the nastier this stuff would get.
Tracy gives an interview on a dock.
They said it was impossible for us to get a boat. We've got the boat, and we've got the crew, and now we're going to go racing, and maybe we just have to prove that we can go racing.
With only a matter of days to go, nearly half the entries line up for a dress rehearsal.
With Howard Jones.
The Fastnet race was the big sort of curtain raiser because it was only a very short amount of time between the finish of that race and the start of the Whitbread.
By that point, I was having huge problems with Marie-Claude.
10 seconds left. The fleet races for the line. 5 seconds and all eyes are on the flag. The race starts the instant they dip.
Two flags lower, crew members work on the sailing Maiden.
Look, get the other ready, Tanya, get the other ready.
Marie-Claude supervises.
Marie-Claude was in charge. And there was no two ways about it, Marie-Claude was in charge.
Two women pull a sail. Tracy steers behind Marie-Claude.
I'd push Tracy into sailing in an area where she was completely out of confidence.
It was like she held a mirror up to me and I kept seeing myself as this person that couldn't skipper the boat. Outwardly, I was agreeing with her and, OK, fine, yep, we'll do it like that. But I knew it was building up in me.
As her crew works, Tracy observes from the wheel. She wears an uneasy expression.
It's making Tracy question her leadership.
A lighthouse stands on a rocky cliff.
We were just about to get to the Fastnet Rock. The atmosphere crackling with tension. I went down below to look for a sail and the boat jerked and I fell and put my hand out to stop myself and I broke my wrist. Claire came up on deck and said, Joe's broken her wrist, you know, we need to go back. And I went, well, no, nearly at the rock, you know, morphine and strap it up. That's what we got the medical kit for.
The full kit and the splints weren't on board because I'd been told to take them off.
I went, what do you mean you haven't got the medical kit? She said, Marie-Claude told me not to bring it. I went, who is in charge of this boat? And she went, quite frankly, Tracy, we don't know.
Young Joe wears a makeshift sling.
So we had to abandon the race and go back to Plymouth.
On the yacht, Tracy glowers.
I still remember how angry I was. I mean, I was so angry, I was crying.
Marie-Claude stares off.
I wanted to rip her throat out.
In a marina, four of the women walk by docked boats.
That was the final straw. We got off the boat and I just said to Marie-Claude, right, that's it, I can't have you on the boat. And I fired her. And it was too late to rebuild.
Video shows Marie-Claude alone at the marina.
Been involved for really 2 years by then. We were 3 weeks before the start. Of course, I was distraught, I wasn't going to do the race. But at the same time, I was relieved because I knew it wouldn't have been easy.
A photo shows Tracy with reporters.
It was kind of like the media was waiting for this moment.
A headline reads, First mate quits as storm brews amid all-female crew.
Some of the crew wants to leave. They had no faith in me.
3 days to race day.
Mary Claw was a critically important person to me and to a lot of us. Yeah, I mean, Mary Claw was a big loss.
I must admit, I did take a big breath in, because then I just thought, oh my God, who's going to steer this boat?
Tracy watches her working crew.
I begged. I begged them to stay. If you do the first leg and you don't think I can do this, I'll fly you home. But please, please don't break the team up now.
Maiden sails in a harbour.
I thought maybe she was right, that I couldn't skipper this boat. But I couldn't pull out.
Tracy stands at the wheel while crew members lounge around her.
I just have to keep going forwards because I have no other choice. That's how we set off on the first leg. It was me pretty much on trial.
An aerial view shows scattered clouds over the ocean. Low in the sky, the sun reflects on the water's calm surface. Archival footage shows docked boats and flags fluttering in the wind. Words appear. Race day. Crews prepare for the competition.
Town Quay, Southampton, 7 a.m. and the dawn of the fifth round the world race.
To actually wake up that morning and think, OK, today we have to set off and sail around the world, is a little bit of a daunting morning.
I didn't sleep much the night before, I remember.
Spectators gather at the harbour.
And driving down to Ocean Village and then walking into this overwhelming mass of noise and people and movement. If you're not on edge already, you are at that point.
Welcome to the Solent, where we're only minutes away from one of the most spectacular sights in sport, the start of the Whitbread Round the World race.
You're already raring to go, I bet.
Yes, it's definitely time to go now. It's been 3.5 years. This time last year, we really didn't think we'd be here. We really didn't think we'd be on the start line. So we're all pretty emotional, yes.
Glimpses show sailors waving and a man kissing a woman's cheeks. The maiden crew prepares the boat.
I didn't want everybody hugging each other and everybody waving and cheering, and I just wanted to go.
Malcolm, we'll talk again in just a couple of minutes, but the atmosphere really building, as you say, because the boats are now leaving Town Quay.
This is the bow of Fisher and Paykel, just coming up to Rothmans, the British entry, skippered by Laurie Smith. There's Steinlager 2 of New Zealand, one of the favourites to win this race.
A load of us left the dock at the same time. You're looking to left and right, you're going, oh, there's Steinlager. And there's Fisher and Paykel, with all these legendary skippers.
On board Maiden, the helmswoman looking over there at Fisher and Paykel, the New Zealand catch.
The tension's starting to build now.
You've never done this before, right? It's monumental.
You can see now where they're manoeuvring for the start with just 3 minutes to go. This is a very tense time for any racing helmsman.
If people couldn't hear my heart, it would be amazing, because it was actually, my T-shirt was moving. It was pounding so hard.
There, the girls in Maiden doing their best. They look like they're going for yet another spinning. They're going to change. They're trying as hard as they can. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, gun. They're off.
The fifth Whitbread Round the World Yacht Race is underway on the first leg from Southampton, England, to Punta del Este, Uruguay. And it's Fortuna from Spain, Pazizi from the Soviet Union, who've got the best starts.
Dozens of yachts set sail. On Maiden, Tracy stands at the wheel.
And on board Maiden is Tracy Edwards, cool, calm and collected.
Nearly 4 years, hard work.
In present day, Tracy gives an emotional smile.
6,000 miles to go to Punta. That's a sight they won't see now again for another 9 months until they get back to the Isle of Wight, having gone right round the world, 33,000 miles in all.
One by one, the boats peel off. Our support boat with all our friends and family on. It was one of the last boats to leave us, and then they finally waved, and you waved to everyone. The last thing that happens is the land disappears, and then it's just you.
A rising view shows the yacht alone on the open sea. With Howard,
when they left Southampton and all the press are gathering in their watering holes. Somebody started a book. How far do you think the girls are going to get?
With Barry.
Well, we didn't think they would even finish the first leg.
Maiden sails.
The closest to home was that they would only get as far as the Needles. Then some people thought they might get as far as the Canary Islands. But none of them thought they would get to the end of leg one in Uruguay.
Well, it was an all-woman crew. Yes, I'm not surprised people were prepared to bet against them. There was nothing to show that they would ever be really acknowledged for anything other than failure.
News footage shows the first leg's route on a map. Text reads 6,281 nautical miles.
The first leg takes a fleet across the North Atlantic south to Uruguay.
On Maiden, a crew member wearing a harness hangs on a sail line.
If you're ready to drop me, come and take the ship out.
The boom lowers and she maneuvers her way down the line to the boat.
They had divided the fleet up into different groups at that point so that similar-sized yachts were competing against each other in classes rather than everybody goes out in one division.
We were in a class with Rock and Roll Sport, L'Esprit de Liberté and La Poste. Everyone in our class was hugely competitive. Not sure they were that happy about us being in their class, if I'm honest.
You know, it was in 1989, you know, they decided to come up with a full team of girls. It's not an easy one. We know by the fact that it was hard, girls together, from Maiden.
We just lost Mary Claude. Joe wasn't there because of her wrist, so we had a different cook.
With Joe?
Yeah. I was gutted, absolutely gutted. So, you know, it wasn't quite what we were all expecting.
On the yacht.
Don't point that thing at me, it might be loaded.
There were 12 of us. Tracy, as the skipper and navigator, was out of the watch system and Cook was out of the watch system. So the 10 of us were split into two teams. And we did 4 hours on and 4 hours off, religiously, come hell or high water.
4 hours on, 4 hours off, 4 hours on, 4 hours off. Best thing was just to keep racing, because that kept you sane, actually.
It's a distance race, it's an endurance race. That's the game.
Tracy works in the small bridge.
I was working so hard, trying to find the wind. Trying to prove that I could do this.
Tracy lived in that cubicle.
I made a couple of really stupid choices very early on. And so we lost time.
Dawn pulls a line on deck. In the cabin, a crew member sleeps on a bunk. Another uses a sewing machine on a sail. Tracy works in the bridge.
But finally, the wind came in. The spinnaker filled.
Wind stretches the sail above the bow.
And then we were off.
30 days at sea. Water splashes on deck as Maiden travels on the choppy ocean.
All of a sudden, other people that weren't necessarily allowed to step up, stepped up. And we're incredibly good.
A crew member works with a sail.
Our fear that we couldn't get somebody that could helm the boat in terrible conditions was completely misfounded.
A woman cranks the wheel. Tanya Visser, sail trimmer, gives an interview.
Team spirit was very good and we came stronger and stronger.
Happy birthday, dear Angela. Happy birthday to you.
Angela blows out candles on a cake.
I thought by the time we got to the equator, we were doing really well.
On a TV program.
Welcome to Punta del Este in Uruguay for the spectacular Whitbread Round the World race.
Before sunrise, a yacht with a New Zealand flag arrives at Punta del Este.
Early morning on day 26, Steinlager 2 first into Punta del Este.
A man holds a trophy.
Seven boats finished within 7 hours of each other in the night of the Maxis.
Daytime, Maiden sails into the harbor.
Eventually, after 36 days, the all-female crew finish in third place in their class. Maybe they have a chance of finishing this marathon.
This was a real surprise to us all when they came in, and we thought, Blimey.
Video shows female spectators, maiden docks.
Coming third into Uruguay was actually a real disappointment.
Women applaud.
And we were gutted.
Standing among her crewmates in a crowd, Tracy holds a champagne bottle and cries.
Of course, everyone else was just happy we were alive.
Tracy gives an interview at the dock.
It's been a long 2 days. It's taken a long time to get in. The wind's dropped, and it just seemed like someone didn't want us to get here very much.
We saw ourselves as a professional sailing team who had entered a race with a goal to win it. The world saw us as a human interest story, or and haven't the girls done well for even arriving?
Holding the champagne, Tracy wipes her mouth.
I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed that there were beefeater girls and balloons and stuff. I'm like, really?
You're very clever to come in the daylight because the pictures are that much better.
Oh, good.
If you looked at the questions or the articles written about us at the time, they were always digging for stories on, well, who's boyfriend, girlfriend? Are you lesbians? Are you sleeping around? Or surely you're not getting on that well? Bunch of women on a boat that size. There must be a lot of squabbles.
What about the crew? A bunch of girls. How'd you all get on?
Remarkably well.
You never saw them ask the guys those questions. They would be asked about tactics, challenges, you know, sail, sensible sporting questions. We almost never got asked those questions. Why?
Everybody's got on very well. We've sailed the boat. We're all very happy with the way we sailed the boat. Wish we could have come in a bit better place, but everybody's got on very well together.
With Tracy.
And a few people were giving you a sort of hard time in the media in the week or so leading up to the start. I mean, are you just happy to keep sailing at the moment?
If I listened to what everyone said about me, I wouldn't be here now. So the people that count think this is a good thing. I think it's a good thing. And I'm just really pleased that we've been allowed to do it.
There's a very well-known yachting journalist who referred to us as a tin full of tarts, initially.
With Bob.
And it seemed to me an all-girls crew, it fitted the bill quite well. And I was very scathing about that.
My coverage wasn't quite as chauvinistic as Bob Fisher's in The Guardian, but it was there was an edge to it, certainly.
And third on elapsed time, Maiden.
Tracy accepts an award.
What the press rescue did was it galvanised me and it focused me. And when we left Uruguay, I have never felt more ready in my life to take something on. And we all were. We were absolutely determined.
In the ocean, wind blows spray off the peaks of cresting waves.
Sailing in the Southern Ocean is like nothing you've ever experienced before, and nothing will prepare you for it.
Waves splash against an iceberg.
It's not a place that takes prisoners.
Some people call it the Sea of Certain Death.
A large wave rises and falls.
You're on your own. There is no hope if anything happens.
The dark blue sea churns.
If you go over the side, your chances of being rescued are next to zero.
Gray clouds hang in the sky. In Punta del Este, a man interviews Tracy.
How are your crew feeling about it?
I think, obviously, they're a bit apprehensive. I think you'd be silly not to. You have to have a very healthy respect of the Southern Ocean. But I see them all very confident, very strong, and ready to go.
Grant Dalton, skipper.
It just goes on day after day of hard physical work. And the guys are pretty fit. I think to a man, they'd be much fitter than the other crews.
John Chittenden, skipper, Crichton's Naturally.
John, is everyone looking forward now to the Southern Ocean leg?
No. I don't know. Certain amount of trepidation, I suppose. That's inevitable.
What do you see as your main priority on this leg?
Well, my priority in the whole race, really, is I don't want to hurt anyone or lose anyone. You know, that would take the thing out of them completely.
Maiden's crew works on board.
Have you got Jo back on board?
Yes, Jo's back, arms mended, and she's very happy to be back.
I was there with my bag ready to go. Take me to the Southern Ocean.
The second marathon leg to Western Australia charts the southern oceans, which threaten constantly changing stormy weather, freezing conditions and icebergs.
Everyone's sort of a little bit nervous at the moment because we know the ice is well north.
Peter Blake, skipper.
Where are the icebergs? Well, nobody knows that for sure. So it's a case of seeing who's going to be the boldest, who is actually going to get in amongst the ice.
With Skip.
The weather down there is very severe. I've seen a few weather maps and I haven't seen lows like that ever before in the Southern Ocean. I don't think we'll see boats going very far south this time.
I was very clear that I was going to take a really southerly route. Go as far south as possible.
The fleet are given a rousing farewell as they chart the new course.
A map shows a course passing Antarctica.
If you imagine the bottom of the world, as far south means that you're almost doing a straight line, and that's the shortest route. There's always a risk in every decision you make, especially if you're making a decision opposite to what everyone else is doing.
On board, Tracy holds a globe. She traces her finger to Australia. Video shows Maiden sailing through the choppy Southern Ocean.
It was most extreme, debilitating temperatures you've ever lived in. Minus 20 with the wind chill. That is really hard.
Snow falls on the yacht. A wave pounds the bow as a crew member steers. Water splashes on board. Later, ice blankets the deck. Wearing waterproof clothing, the crew shakes ice off the sail. A wave hits an iceberg. A glimpse shows a radar screen.
We've seen four icebergs so far.
We didn't see the first two on the radar when you're doing 14 knots at night. That is a bit frightening.
40 days at sea. A crew member hangs on to the mast.
I'll never forget doing bow watch.
When it was really foggy, you did need a sacrificial victim at the front of the boat that would just hit the iceberg first.
You'd be strapped on, you'd have about three face masks on. You could barely last 20 minutes up there.
A woman drinks from a container.
Big white chunks of skin that start flaking off your face.
The sea froths next to the boat.
It took the girls half an hour to get dressed and half an hour to get undressed.
Claire lies in her bunk.
By the time you got into your clothing, you really didn't have an awful lot of sleeping time, so you were getting quite sleep deprived.
On John Chittenden's boat.
On Crichton's, naturally, there's an early problem, a broken cap shroud that's cost them several days.
Yeah. Waves rise under an overcast sky.
The waves are just huge.
A boat sails away from a wave.
All you could see was a bank of water that you were going to sail.
A ship's bow slices through the water. On Maiden, crew members steer two wheels.
You'll get picked up. You'll almost feel like you're looking vertically down at the tip. And then, of course, you know, you just start surfing, you know, like you're on a surfboard. And a big rooster tail out the back as you surf your way down. I mean, it's absolutely exhilarating.
Maiden leans to the port side as it sails forward. The crew holds on to the deck as it tilts at a 45-degree angle.
I did really relish the hard adventure.
With Angela.
I loved that. I love those big seas. I love surfing.
Maiden continues through the rough waters. Three crew members stand behind the woman at the wheel. A wave splashes the deck and the camera's lens. A crew member checks a line next to the mast. With Tracy.
You know, you can get overconfident and you can think you know it all.
The ship sails at night. Below deck, a woman uses a tool to repair the boat. 52 days at sea. In her bunk, a crew member holds a pen. Tracy uses the radio in the bridge.
Crichton's naturally, Maiden.
Holding a pen, she waits for a response. With Sally.
I remember Nancy waking me up and saying that there'd been a horrendous accident.
Tracy waits at the radio, then holds up the receiver.
Can anyone
anyone hear Crichton's naturally?
Yes, Crichton's ripping off.
Tracy took the call on the radio. John Chittenden, the skipper, had a situation on deck.
At night, a boat bounces on the sea.
They'd lost two crew members over the side.
The grainy video focuses on the dark surface of the water.
You would have minutes before hypothermia sets in. You've got to turn these huge boats round and then get to people, which in itself is an incredible feat of skill.
With Claire,
seeing a tiny little head dot in the dark is incredibly difficult.
Equity in law, madam.
John Chittenden said they've both been recovered, but they didn't have a doctor. So Claire came to the radio and talked them through saving the life of one of them, Bart Vandendwey.
We sort of knew that there were two people involved.
Tracy sits at the radio.
But we were only helping one.
She turns and shakes her head. Another crew member stands in the doorway with a solemn expression. Daytime, video shows crew manning the deck of Crichton's Naturally.
Anthony Phillips, they think, hit his head as he went over. He was floating face down in the water when they got to them. Yeah, that was devastating.
On deck, Anthony Phillips grins. The image freezes.
So devastating that he lost his life.
The boat's yellow hull cuts through the water. John Chittenden stands at the wheel. A seagull swoops over the ocean with Tracy.
The ocean's always trying to kill you. It doesn't take a break.
Maiden sails past an iceberg.
We couldn't afford to make mistakes. We were literally harnessed on from the minute the hatch was open.
With Sally.
The whole time you're aware that this tragedy has unfolded on another boat and they're still having to cope with it. And keep yourself safe and work your watchers and try and make the boat go fast.
A close view shows the boat slicing through the ocean. Water sprays at the lens. A crew member kneels on deck.
Things just keep going and you just do it. And that's what we did.
The maiden crew works the lines. With Bruno Dubois, skipper of Ruckinore.
It was a tough leg, for sure. I think it took 5 weeks. We do not sail 5 weeks anymore in the Whitbread or the Volvo Ocean Race. 5 weeks was long.
What I discovered in the second leg is that as a human, you can go much further than you think.
On deck, two crew members crank a winch. In the bridge, Tracy sits at the navigation equipment.
A race like that is won and lost on its navigation.
You could see sometimes other boats and they hadn't taken their big sails down and we had early and then they'd catch up with us, but then the wind would kick in and we would be under control and we'd take off. I think that's when I suddenly thought, crikey, we actually could do really well here.
The sky shows through clouds.
As we were coming out of the Southern Ocean up towards Australia, you're starting to see blue sky. The colour of the sea starts to change. It's like being reborn again.
65 days at sea. An aerial view shows maidens sailing through calm, sunny waters.
Land smells, and you can smell it days and days out, and particularly Australia, all the eucalyptus and this deep, hot earth smell.
The final few hours coming out of the Southern Ocean, we hadn't got any of the positions.
Maiden sails towards other boats near land.
As we were sailing to the finishing line, the boats were coming out to meet us. That's when we realised we've won.
The crew cheers.
We've won this leg. We've won this leg.
I mean, it was mega. It was absolutely mega.
The first time in 12 years, a British boat has won a leg of the Whitbread Round the World race.
As they crossed the line, the elation was obvious, as the crew celebrated the victory many had said was impossible. And soon afterwards, they'd replaced maiden sails with the battle flag that summed up the spirit of female defiance.
A flag shows a woman.
French boat, L'Esprit de Liberté, isn't due into Fremantle until tomorrow morning.
That was the leg we were all meant to fail, and then to have won it, and to have won it so convincingly was more than anything.
Maiden docks.
I turned round and David Pritchard Barrett handed me the Beefeater trophy.
I'd followed the Whitbread Round the World race since 1974, and I had seen these Whitbread trophies being waved around.
A man gives the Beefeater trophy to Tracy.
And all of a sudden, one of them was presented to our boat.
She holds it up.
And I couldn't have been happier.
I was like doing cartwheels. That's what that was like.
The girls say their victory is a victory for all women sailors.
Tracy gives an interview.
You're a woman, you're told you have to look like this, be like that, you have to use this, use that, you can't have spots, you can't have this, you have to wear the right things. Go to the Southern Ocean, you spend 28 days, you don't have to wash, you don't have to dress properly, you don't have to do your hair, it's great, we loved it.
It was amazing.
What's the first thing you want to do?
Get drunk. Get drunk and eat a bacon sandwich.
My mum was standing there with this massive, beaming smile on her face.
It's fantastic. I hope my mascara's not running because I've just been crying and crying with pride and I'm just going to burst, I'm sure. I can't believe that little horror grew up to do this. I really can't.
She was absolutely right. Never stuck at anything, gave up at the drop of a hat. This is the first time in my life I had stood up for something I believed in. And the harder it became, the more I wanted to do it for her.
Tracy hugs her mom.
The guys from Rukkerne, they were not very happy. They didn't like to finish behind us.
The Belgians on Rukkerne, I heard to say, Maiden's win was a fluke.
We were beat by Maiden at that leg. They managed to perform well and push the boat hard. And I'm sure we said, okay, the Chicks won, and let's try to beat them the next leg, so.
These girls were beating the guys on the water, and they were looking a bit sheepish.
I think a lot of people wanted to dismiss it as a one-off. Lucky leg, yeah, yeah. I don't think we were seen as the boat to beat.
The crew meets with the press.
I remember thinking, why wasn't it taken seriously? The reason Maiden entered the Whitbread was to prove that women can do things as well as men. What the aggression against Maiden did was made me realise maybe I am actually a feminist. I'd begun a fight that I didn't realise I was having.
2 seconds, one, there's the gun, and it's a really good start.
The next leg started a couple of days before Christmas.
Rukkerne is 9 miles behind.
On Maiden.
Esprit is 9 miles behind. And the cost of 86 behind. Oh.
In the decorated bunks.
It's time to get up.
This is the best thing at home.
I know. I didn't get any stupid underwear that Mom always gives me. Happy Christmas, everybody.
The women drink from bottles. Tracy examines hers.
Lucky we've all got one.
The third leg from Fremantle to Auckland is the shortest.
3,400 miles is quite a short hop.
Dawn turns a winch handle.
Now it's down to tactics, and tactics is not my strong point. When you're racing boat against boat, when you can see each other, it's that they've tacked, we need to tack. It's all quite tense.
The yacht sails over choppy waves.
Luckily, Dawn and Michelle and Mickey were all really hot on tactics.
Dawn steers, 76 days at sea. Now Claire looks up thoughtfully.
I think we were so focused on doing well.
Knife edge stuff indeed. In these conditions, one mistake could mean disaster.
The crew sails on rough waters.
At one point, we were match racing Rukkerne, and we could see her.
Footage shows Rukkerne in the distance.
We were close to each other all the time. I especially remember along the south shore of Australia where we were downwind. Jibing and crossing.
When there is another sail on the horizon of one of your competitors, you will always find an extra gear.
She was in front of us and we spent all day overtaking her.
The crew sails in rain gear.
But Esprit de Liberté was still ahead of us.
Their competitor sails a distance in front of Maiden.
Let's
looks like you can see the writing of liberty.
A wave crashes on deck as the crew works diligently.
Very intense, it's very focused. You are doing everything you can to squeeze the last bit of boat speed out of that boat.
They continue tailing the other yacht.
This is constant stress. I started just sleeping in the nav station because it seemed pointless going back to my bunk. Most of us didn't sleep about the last 2 or 3 days. Just couldn't. For the last few hours, we were match racing down the coast of New Zealand.
The yacht sails at sunset.
And then it got dark. Then we didn't have any more positions.
At night, crew members adjust a sail.
There is nothing more scary than ghosting through the darkness, not knowing where they were.
A light shines on Maiden as it glides ahead.
We kind of thought by the time we got in, midnight on a Sunday, no one's going to be out and about.
On deck, a crew member points.
As we were coming in, Dawn said, Is that loads of little birds on the top of that wharf over there? What is that? Then we realise it's people. It's people. Thousands of people.
At the wharf, a crowd celebrates. A woman holds a sign reading, Welcome Maiden. A spotlight illuminates Maiden as it arrives. 87 days at sea. Surrounded by her crew, Tracy turns the wheel.
We cross the finishing line, and that's when we realize that a spring was an hour behind us.
Video shows Maiden's arrival.
It was just after midnight when Maiden slipped across the line, an hour ahead of arch rival, the French yacht, L'Esprit de Liberté.
The crew celebrates. Later, they receive flowers and champagne.
To win such a long Southern Ocean leg, and then to go and do the tactical one.
Okay, give me a shot.
With Angela.
Yeah, that was really the icing on the cake now. Nobody believed that we were going to do as well.
By the time we got to Auckland, we were walking tall.
Everybody was beside themselves.
It proved, if there had been any doubts, that the all-women win in the previous leg was no fluke. They were quite simply the best crew, male or female.
Tracy sprays champagne.
The sideshow sort of started moving into the main circus tent.
You look pretty tired, though. You've been trying hard with these Frenchmen and Belgians and Germans coming at you from all directions.
Oh, yeah. We're a very competitive class. They wanted revenge this leg, and we were determined they weren't going to have it. They've pushed us very hard. We've pushed them very hard. We've all enjoyed it. And we feel that definitely this leg that accepted us as equals and raced against us as such.
And in Division D at the halfway stage, Maiden leads L'Esprit de Liberté by 16 hours.
Daytime. In a parade, the Maiden crew rides on a float.
Public reaction was overwhelming.
In matching white T-shirts and pink shorts, the women wave to a crowd.
You like gods. It was really cool.
Crew members throw streamers as they continue through the city.
They were heroines. Well, heroes they were, because they were regarded as men by that time.
Tracy signs autographs for children.
You felt like a pop star, but you aren't. People at street say, hey, Tanya, we didn't know that people knew us like that.
Two Maiden girls are a lot better than boys.
Tracy reads a card. Video shows a huge crowd at a dock. People in costume dance.
All of a sudden, it dawned on us that actually we could win.
Even I became competitive, because I'm not competitive at all, and even I was saying, you know, yeah, we can do this.
Video shows the Maiden crew at a pool party. A bearded man wearing a lei talks with Tracy. People lounge in the pool. Claire laughs as Tracy grabs a dark-haired man around the middle and hauls him to the pool. She pushes him in the water and grins. On Maiden, Tracy gives an interview.
Foreign kids come down to the boats and they know everyone's name. They know all the crew's name. They know what we all do, what job on the boat. It's really good.
I should have been now supremely confident that we could win the next legs. But actually, I was gripped by fear. I thought, if we lose now, I've lost this for us.
The lowest bit, the middle.
I was now more terrified of not doing well than I ever had been at the start.
But these ladies, they really had the idea of, we're going to just get around the world, and now they're winning their division, and they want to really prove that they can do something here.
In the harbor, the competing yachts sail.
There's the gun, and the Whitbread fleet is on its way.
We weren't naive. We knew it was going to be long. We knew it was going to be wet. We knew it was going to be hard.
Smile!
And you could feel the jitters. I could feel the jitters in all of us.
At this point, that we were getting towards the end of the race, really. The idea was that you'd build up a big lead, then you take your chances around Cape Horn.
A map shows the route from New Zealand to under South America, then up the East Coast. We view Maiden's bow on the ocean. In the bridge, Tracy works on navigation.
Often, I just sat there on my own in the middle of the night.
Glow of the instruments, everyone's on watch, other people are asleep. Re-going over everything, and I'll just have another look at that weather chart, and I'll just have another think about this. I overthought it, basically. And I put us in a really bad position to come up towards Cape Horn.
100 days at sea. On deck, crew members wear hooded jackets.
9 days and we haven't reached 11 knots.
Nancy sits by the railing.
I'm pissed off because there's no wind.
In the bridge, Tracy touches her forehead.
She just got more and more stressed, really. And was permanently sleeping in her chair. Yeah, she was exhausted.
Glimpses of archival footage show mountainous islands off a coast. On the deck, a crew member raises a bottle toward distant land.
As we came up to Cape Horn, I could see the other boats doing well.
25th of February, and we're 10 miles away from Cape Horn. We've got not that much wind, so the wind dead behind us, but should be able to come up pretty soon. Esprit is 55 miles in front of us. Hopefully we'll get enough wind to get us around the Horn.
We went round Cape Horn, and then there was, you know, the possibility of some options opening up for us to be able to pick up some ground. So I decided to go for it.
The yacht goes over rough waves.
Turning up and going up past the Falklands, it got a bit busy.
The boat leans to the side.
There's only been a few times in my life that it's been that rough.
Often on a boat, you know, you'll find the shortest distance is straight into the wind, for example. Well, boats don't sail into the wind, so how far off do you go?
It's like hitting a brick wall in a car without your seatbelt on every 10 seconds. It's just relentless.
There's a lot of slamming. Boom, bang, boom, bang. Takes a lot out of the boat.
The crew continues through the turbulent sea. As the yacht tilts, the corner of a sail drags through the water. In the bridge, Tracy uses a radio.
Station calling Maiden. You're very
I was
very...
in the nav station one night, and I suddenly realized my feet were wet. I went up and saw who was on deck, and I said, could you just have a look at this water? And by that point, it was up to the first bunk.
Crew members inspect the cabin.
We couldn't figure out where the hell it was coming from.
Water pools in a section of the boat. A kneeling crew member works.
We have been stopped in the boat.
Your mind starts racing, like, aluminum boat, cracking mast, maybe there's a crack in the hull. So is there a possibility that we're actually splitting the hull in these waves? Are we pounding that much?
Crew members assess the cabin.
And you've got to fix it. You don't have a choice about, okay, well, we've done our best, now let's call the repair people. There are no repair people.
An aerial view shows Maiden sailing. On board, the crew works on fixing the boat. A woman uses a tool on an unscrewed hose.
At some point, clearly, your focus has to shift to, okay, do we need to do something more serious?
The woman pries at something in the hose.
At one point, we called the Falkland Islands and they scrambled an RAF Hercules.
A military plane flies by the boat.
They were on standby for a mayday.
A crew member uses a flashlight.
Oh, it's being tucked up and it's falling out again.
When you rebuilt it with your own hands, it gives you an intimate knowledge of the boat.
One of the women wipes an engine belt.
In the end, it was found coming in through the mast because the boat's taken such an uphill pounding.
Some of the crew rides on deck.
Eventually, we sorted the problem out and we got moving.
Maiden sails on.
That really scuppered their chances of doing anything in that leg.
The women navigate the yacht. 112 days at sea. In the kitchen area, Joe needs dough. In the bridge, Tracy uses the radio.
Esprit de Liberté, Esprit de Liberté, Maiden.
We'd had an overall lead of 18 hours, and we were now 16 hours behind.
Tracy writes a note. Joe continues kneading.
She took on the job as skipper and navigator, and most skippers will blame the navigator and most navigators blame the skipper, so she really took on a huge responsibility herself for that.
A view from the boat shows the sun low over the horizon. On deck, Dawn talks with a crewmate. Tracy gazes out at the sea.
She just got more and more isolated from the crew, if that makes sense.
Maiden bobs on the water with Bruno.
You cannot lie in the offshore sailing. It's impossible to lie. When you are 3 weeks, 4 weeks at sea, there's no chance. You have to be yourself. So you learn a lot about that. You don't know that you're learning, but at the end you realize that you learn and you're a different man.
Tracy continues staring off with a somber expression.
I was pretty down in the dumps and finding it quite hard to get myself out of that.
I actually had to pull her up, bring her back into the moment and say, right, this is what we're dealing with now.
Maiden sails on.
We were very conscious of the fact that when we came into Fort Lauderdale, there would be criticism of our performance.
On deck, a crew member grabs a line. Another leans over a railing and brushes her teeth.
We talked about distracting the press a little bit from the fact that we'd done so badly.
Jenny and another woman shave their legs.
Call this shaving. We also call it shearing or carving.
All of the girls would have one clean set of clothes, and basically that was put on just before the finish line.
Tracy comes up and says, Sam, how about we put on those bathing suits, you know? Oh, well, which colour will I have, the grey or the white?
An aerial view glides toward Maiden. The spinnaker and the mainsail move in the gentle wind as the yacht glides through the water. On the deck, the crew wears one-piece swimsuits, some gray and some white. Several boats ride near Maiden with passengers watching from the decks. Tracy stands at the wheel and another woman cranks a winch. Some spectators take photos of the crew with Barry Pickthall.
We were looking and they had these very, really wonderful looking swimsuits.
The crew continues working on deck.
We were all up for it, a bit of a laugh. In hindsight, we didn't really think that through enough with a, you know, media savvy hat on.
A crowd watches from a pier and a helicopter flies overhead. A Coast Guard crew stares toward the women. Tracy continues steering. A photo shows the swimsuit-clad crew.
It had quite an effect.
Headlines read, British babes make a splash in the USA and maidens scrub up well.
It was the most syndicated sports photograph that year.
Tracy wears a serious expression as they dock Maiden.
I still felt awful. I mean, really awful.
A crowd cheers them on from the pier.
Everyone else wants you to be happy, so you smile.
If you can't win, wear swimsuits.
You have responsibility to your shore team and to everyone that's come to see you in.
Tracy drinks beer, then looks up and grins.
Sorry? If you
An older man kisses her cheeks. Video shows a hotel.
Then you go to your hotel room, you burst into tears, and you drink a lot of alcohol.
Nancy gives an interview.
Tracy admits she's made one or two wrong decisions on this leg, and yet it seems that the women stand by her and don't make a fuss about it.
No. Oh, she's the skipper, and what she says goes, and we'll always stand behind her.
With Joe.
Been together for a long time now, and we're very close. We know each other very well, and it is a special crew.
And you've known Tracy for even longer, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
How long?
15 years. We worked it out the other day. Quite a long time, since we were 12.
And when you were 12-year-olds, did you ever talk about this?
No. No, you wouldn't think that anything like this was going to happen. It's just amazing to think that you're doing what you want to do, sailing around the world. Amazing.
The crew boards Maiden with bags.
The things that used to get talked about, the expectation of how we'd be, that we'd be a bunch of bitches or we'd be, you know, pulling each other's hair out and arguing all the time just wasn't a true reflection at all. Actually, we were a great team.
On the deck, they sit together. Tracy holds a pen and notebook.
No, we'll just get on with it.
We won together as a team and we lost together as a team, but that didn't make it any better. I still felt miserable.
What she was thinking was, oh, we can't win this race now. What I and others were trying to say to her was, we can't write it off. Anything could happen. Anything could happen to any boat like it's just happened to us.
You are only allowed one bag.
We were very conscious of not taking any excess weight on the last leg home, that we were going to go for this.
One bag. And that is really it. It's very strict.
Sorry.
We can't afford anything more than that.
The mood was definitely, right, this is it. This is our last shot.
In the water, the boats line up in starting positions.
So it should be a spectacular and all-action start then as the fleet head down Fort Lauderdale Beach to the turning mark around 6 miles away from here.
We had a good start
when we thought, right, we are going to win this, and we're not just here to be the first girls anymore. We're here to be the first girls that win.
A map shows leg 6, 3,837 nautical miles to Southampton. Maiden drifts through calm waters.
The optimism faded extremely quickly. Wind, there was no wind.
The water ripples gently. Tracy stands on the deck.
This was a long, slow leg. Very few opportunities to do anything different from the other boats. The disadvantage of being heavier.
153 days at sea.
We've been out here an awful lot longer than we expected. It's been a very elongated leg, and I think we're all finding it a little bit hard to believe we are actually ever going to get there.
You cannot change the wind. You cannot change the direction, so we had to deal with it.
It's not over till it's over. All sorts of things can happen. So you never stop racing until right up to the very end.
On Ruckenor, Bruno gives an interview.
Ils sont un peu fatigués aussi. Ils ont passé 4 mois dans le conteneur à Punta au soleil. Ils sont un peu.
He smiles.
En mauvais état.
We were very, very close to England. We knew they were behind.
They are 2 miles ahead of me with three knots and current winners.
Just we were against the current. We decided to go as close as we could to the banks. And suddenly, bang! We hit the banks.
Bruno shrugs.
We could see Ruckenor up ahead. We're stuck on a sandbank.
We had a full crew on the boom to heel the boat. And I could hear the noise of the sand and everything and the current on the keel, and we were hitting that.
The Ruckenor crew stands and sits on the mainsail's boom as it leans heavily to the side.
We realized that we had the chance to overtake.
Glimpses show the Maiden crew working diligently. Dawn signals to a crewmate.
They could have stuck there for a while. We were sort of grooving up behind, and then the wind kept dropping on us, and, you know, the gods were not in our favour.
We managed to get moving again, so we were quite happy. We could relax.
Maiden glides on the calm water. The sun hangs low over the horizon.
It was really in the last few days that we realised we couldn't make up the time, that we weren't going to be first.
On deck, Joe, Dawn and Tracy wear sombre expressions.
I was heartbroken. I was just absolutely devastated.
A view from the boat shows low waves.
I felt like we'd achieved nothing.
Tracy gazes out.
I'd seen a glimpse of what we could do. We could have won. I was absolutely dreading the end. Oh, I just didn't want to go home.
An aerial view shows sunlight glinting on the ocean. Several boats travel toward a rock formation.
We've spotted the Needles at sunrise.
Maiden drifts toward it.
It was a really calm day. Calm on the boat.
The yacht sails alongside the golden light reflecting on the water. 167 days at sea.
Everybody was doing what we do.
Jenny brushes her teeth. Crew members work the sails.
By that time, we didn't need to talk to do any of the maneuvers we did. We thought each other's thoughts before we realized we were thinking them.
Tracy sits beside a crewmate as the ship glides toward the sunlight.
I didn't feel the need to speak, feel the need to say anything at all. It was just the closeness.
They gaze ahead.
That was the special thing. We respected each other. We trusted each other. There was never an argument.
Wearing puffy jackets, crew members sit and stand on deck.
I remember thinking, what a huge journey we've all been through.
A boat sails a distance ahead of them.
That amazing adventure would be over, you know?
An overhead view shows the crew gathered on Maiden.
And I'd miss those girls deeply.
They approach a small boat.
We saw a boat on the horizon coming out.
A little tiny dinghy appeared with a couple of kids in it. Kids not very old, maybe 12-ish.
I think Nancy said, oh, there must be a race. And we said, oh, isn't that fantastic? They're starting early.
And they just came alongside and we said, hello. I said, hello. I said, are you just going to come up this island with us?
And then we saw another boat.
Tracy looks around. A boat rides beside them.
We thought they were going to motor past. And then they sort of turned round and started motoring alongside us.
Tracy peers ahead. A sailboat turns around. Several boats follow Maiden closely. On one vessel, a woman takes a photo.
And then more and more and more boats turned up.
A group waves from a yacht with a banner reading, "Welcome home, Maiden." Angela waves back.
It was no inkling, I mean, it was just surreal, the whole thing. Just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
A procession of boats surrounds Maiden as it sails toward shore.
We didn't know. Nobody told us that it would be like that. I remember the boat with all the photographers and...
Is that all for us?
From a crowded boat, people take video and pictures of the women. In a small motorboat, a group tosses flowers onto Maiden.
It didn't make any sense to me. I actually thought there must be somebody more important coming up behind us, because it just didn't make any sense.
Sally decorates the deck with a flower.
It's just that thing of disbelief, you know, just looking around at all these people that have come out to see you.
On a larger boat, people crowd the decks.
One of the boats has got all our families on board.
A video shows the Maiden crew waving at them. Now Claire puts her hands to her chest.
I get emotional now.
She covers her mouth.
Sorry, I wasn't expecting that. It was brilliant.
On the yacht, young Claire gazes out. A banner reads, Maiden, simply the best.
No one cared that we hadn't won.
Crew members smile and gaze up. Now Claire looks off thoughtfully.
There was a bigger picture than winning. We had done so much more than what we had set out to do.
The Maiden crew celebrates.
We were doing something that we were told that we couldn't do. And we were doing it anyway.
I think if you believe in everything that people tell you you can't do, what would humankind have achieved? Right?
The crew pulls in a sail. Tracy steers.
Michelle handed the wheel over to me, and as she was handing the wheel over to me, all the ship's horns in Southampton docks went off, and all the boats around us blew their horns. And the noise was... Sorry. The noise was just... It was completely overwhelming.
A glimpse shows the procession.
It just really cemented that moment. In everyone's heads, you know, it was just that moment was there forever.
On the deck, Tracy grins.
We came around the corner into Ocean Village and it was just wall-to-wall people.
Crowds of people stand on the dock.
That was, without doubt, one of the great welcomes that any crew has ever had in the Whitbread race at all time.
We arrive in Southampton, in front of Maiden. Hundreds, thousands of people on the dock. They were not there for us. It was a first step that Tracy made to show the world that girls could do a fantastic job. And it was an open door to other girls after.
Maiden docks.
I remember being deeply proud of Tracy, actually, and what she had achieved to get us there. She did it. She got us there.
Angela shrugs.
Fair play.
On the docked Maiden with her crew, Tracy sprays champagne.
Let's face it, without Tracy, there would be no Maiden.
Tracy Edwards is the first woman to be named Britain's Yachtsman of the Year.
Tracy steps on stage with Peter Blake, who holds a trophy.
Look at the little dot, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tracy Edwards.
Peter takes the microphone.
Very, 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 very well done from the rest of the world.
He shakes Tracy's hand, then gives her the trophy. She smiles happily. The rest of the crew stands behind her.
The experience of sailing around the world with this...
Now Tracy's eyes glisten.
Sorry. Amazing. Group of women.
Glimpses show her crew gathered on the stage. In her interview, Tracy shrugs as she gazes up.
Just took everything to a whole new level in my life. They had a skipper that was learning on the job, and they taught me so much about myself. They allowed me to be who I was. You know, and I have some horrendous flaws, and they didn't matter. Didn't matter.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first ever woman to receive the Yachtsman of the Year trophy, Tracy Edwards.
On stage, Tracy holds her trembling hand to her mouth as she cries. The announcer gives her a short embrace and she grins. She faces the microphone. Lowering her hand, she looks toward the audience. She shakes her head.
I don't know what I need to say, which is unusual for me. All I can say is that this should be a reward for not only myself, but for the marvellous crew which I sail with, without whom none of this could have happened. It doesn't just take a skipper, it takes a brilliant crew, and that's what I've got. And I'd like to say thank you very much to them for believing in me. Enough to do the race with me.
I've worked with young people who have a dream, but they don't believe that they can achieve it.
and then say, oh, what if I tell you a story about a young girl who had a dream about sailing around the world? And they go, pfft. Okay, what if I tell you that it did happen, you know?
On stage, Tracy looks moved as she gazes out. Fade to black. Remaining opening credits. Film editor, Katie Breyer. Music by Samuel Sim and Rob Manning. Co-executive producers, Ollie Harbottle and Anna Godas. Executive producer, James Erskine. End credits, Maiden Crew, Tracy Edwards, MBE, Joe Gooding, Jenny Mundy, Mandy Swan, Angela Heath, Tanya Visser, Sarah Davies, Michaela Von Koskel, Nancy Harris, Sally Hunter, Michelle Paré, Claire Russell, Dawn Riley, Shore Crew, Howard Gibbons, Dee Bach, Duncan Walker, Ian Bruce, Johnny LeBon, Linda Trumbull, Pam Hale, Sarah Jane Ingram, contributors, Barry Pickthall, Bob Fisher, Bruno Dubois, Marie-Claude Hayes, Skip Novak, Associate Producer, Sam Brayshaw, Line Producer, Rachel Doctors, Director of Photography, Chris Openshaw, Onboard Photography by Joe Gooding and Tanya Visser. Special thanks to Alexandra Roberts, Daniel Hajnal, Gareth Evans, Kirsty Bell, Luke Tremoulet, MaidenFactor.org, Paul Gardner, Richard Johnson, Avtesh Mola, Gary Lovejoy, Kaya Bint Savage, Libby Muddett, McKenna Edwards-Mayer, Mark Lucas, Patrick Fisher, Roundtable Films, Sheen Mount Primary School, Volvo Ocean Race, Leon Sefton, Jordy Nevis. Credits roll. Maiden is currently sailing around the world to raise funds for girls everywhere to have an education. If you would like to support Maiden, you can donate at www.themaidenfactor.org. Logos, Creativity Media, Dog Woof, The Maiden Factor, New Black Films. Copyright New Black Film Sailing Limited, 2018. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Sony Pictures Classics, read by Adrienne Barbeau. For more information about motion picture access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. A royal blue background fills the screen with white words at its center. Sony Pictures Classics.